your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed my conversation with Rick Bensignor to start off this show. I am now chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I visit every day. Mark, we're going to skip over this G20 meeting because I don't think there's much more to say. We are simply just waiting to hear what the results are, what the comments are from Trump and Xi. But let's talk about what I think is continuing to drive these markets, and this is Fed easing perceptions. Everybody seems to be pricing in one, and if not more than one, rate cut this year. But when we look around, it just doesn't still seem like stuff in the U.S. is that bad. Yes, some of the recent economic data has definitely been trending in the wrong direction, but you look at the markets, U.S. markets are at or close to all-time highs. What do you think, Mark? Do you think that right now you could consider the expectations, almost peak easing expectations for the Fed?
Yeah, this I think we are. I mean, there's four meetings that the Fed has in the second half of the year. The market is pricing in a 75 basis point cut. And I think that there are still some people who talk about 50 basis points. But after a recent comments by Powell, the chairman, and by Bullard, who's the St. Louis Fed president, the only one to dissent from this last meeting in favor of immediate cut, is not so dovish that he wants to support a 50 basis point move. I kind of think of it like this, that matters how you conceive of the situation. What will the Fed do? Will they give us an insurance policy like they did in the late 90s, late in the business cycle? Even though the stock market, I think, was up about 20% when they gave us that rate cut then, the idea is that you just take out an insurance policy, just extend the business cycle. On the other hand, what the market seems to be pricing in is a beginning of an easing cycle, not just an insurance policy, but a more serious, sustained campaign. Now, what's interesting is the market has three cuts priced in, but the Wall Street Journal Dow Jones did a survey this week, and they found that economists, not the same as investors, too poor to be investors, that the economist looks for only two cuts this year. And so I think that we're at that point where it's hard to imagine the market pricing in four cuts. That'd be a cut at every meeting. That would be just, I think that would require greater deterioration of the economy than we're seeing. And when everything's said and done, what are we really seeing? You know, at the end of last week, we had the personal consumption expenditures. And this is the 70% or 65% of the economy. And the U.S. consumer, the past 3 months, so this would be March, April, and May data, the strongest 3 months since the crisis, since the great crisis in 2009. And so we got consumers still doing well. Unemployment is at, say, call it 50-year lows. You've got financial conditions, stock market near record highs, bond yields low, not seeing the kind of financial stress. You know, those large banks pass the Fed stress test, and that gives them the right to basically return a lot of capital to investors. And when I say a lot, I mean $175 billion in stock buybacks and dividends. So I just don't see the urgency or the compelling need to begin a big easing cycle.
That's a crazy stat to think about, that much money could be coming out of the banks being returned to investors in the form of dividends. I think it's reasonable to expect that a lot of that money will end up back in the markets. But Mark, even though, yes, we're not seeing the worst data from the U.S., there has been a general downtrend in some of the recent data. We haven't heard the Fed use that data-dependent term so much as they did anymore, but they are continuing to point to inflation, which is, quite frankly, stuck. And that is also being used as one of the reasons why they will ease further. How do you think that's playing into it? One, inflation, and two, this general downtrend in some of the data.
Yeah, we have seen, it looks like this, that the we have a lot of soft data. And by that, I mean like the survey data for June. And so it does look like the second quarter ended on a soft note. But we'll see the jobs data coming after the 4th of July. And I think they will see that was a bit of a fluke, the weakness of the past month. And I think that we'll see the earnings stay strong. I do think that the Fed is couching their talk about easing in terms of inflation, sort of undershooting their target. It is, of course, it's soft. We're talking about 1.5, 1.6% on the PCE deflator that the Fed targets. I'm not so sure that that's a problem, though. I mean, because it's sort of like, at what price does it cost us to address that? And I'm still thinking that the Fed, because we're overshooting on unemployment, that is, unemployment is below where the Fed says it can be in a sustained basis in the long term. And so if we undershoot on the unemployment, doesn't it let us undershoot on inflation for a while and without having to take big policy actions? And I tell you, what still concerns me, and I don't know exactly how it works out this way, but I think that somehow the Federal Reserve are going to back ourselves back into this cycle. And the cycle runs something like this. It is not what the Fed tells us. It's not what conventional wisdom that the Fed kills recoveries. The last recovery I can think the Fed purposely killed was in the early 1980s. And that was with Paul Volcker and a double-digit inflation we had from the late 70s, early 80s. But since then, the crisis, the economic crisis that, of our generation that we've had to live through as adults, the great financial crisis, it was not that monetary policy was too tight. The crisis before that was the tech bubble. Monetary policy wasn't too tight then either. And then early in my career, I can say it's early now. At the time, it didn't seem that way. We had the savings and loan crisis. And again, that wasn't too easy a Fed policy. So I think by the Fed somehow being squeezed back into this easier policy, partly because of the headwinds caused by the U.S. trade policy, I just get concerned that we're going to trigger some other financial excesses. And I'm not sure those financial excesses are where everybody looks. Like right now, everybody's looking at the CLO, the collateralized loan market, or the all the double B corporate bonds. And of course, crisis can happen there. I just think that the crisis typically takes place where we're not looking at it, places where not everybody's, where the Wall Street Journal is not putting headlines together, you know, every other day, that kind of thing. And I'm just not sure what that is yet.
Yeah, that is very true, that usually these crises do come out of areas that people aren't looking at. But right now, we just have these comments of this everything bubble, where it seems like there are excesses across the board in the financial markets. That being said, I do want to touch on the environment, again, that we are seeing where risk on and risk off are moving higher. Bonds are up there, the 10-year right around 2%. Bonds have been screaming higher, but have taken a little bit of a breather here. U.S. equity markets at or near all-time highs, but then also gold this month in what is typically a slow month for gold has moved over $100 from its low to its high. It was $130. That's also picking up some momentum. So where is the reward going to come from for the rest of this year, possibly?
Yes, yeah, so I think that how you framed it, I think that's the way a lot of people are seeing this. Bonds are telling us one thing, and they're telling us that things are not looking so good. And maybe it's not just today, but going forward. On the other hand, people seem to not get enough of equities. But I think that there could be like a common ground here. And I think that common ground is that what the market's telling us, I think, is that interest rates will stay lower for longer. That is the message we're getting from the central banks, it seems. And I think the market, so one idea, right, is that this is not sustainable. I mean, I think we have almost a little bit more than $13 trillion of negative yielding bonds. This past week, Austria sold a bond 5 years. They had a lower interest rate than the ECB's deposit rate, which is minus 40 basis points. It's like the first time that's happened. They have a 100-year bond. Listen to this. The 100-year bond in Austria is yielding about 120 basis points. And so I think that the idea that I'm getting is that interest rates stay lower for longer, and that means that there's nothing to do with your money but buy stocks. But if you're going to have a low interest rate environment for a prolonged period of time, that this might really turn out to be sustainable. I mean, Japan has had near zero overnight interest rates for the bulk of my career. And it's still, people say, not sustainable, but there it is, 20 years later. And so I think that if interest rates stay low for longer, that some things like gold, which in their natural form do not have a yield stream, it might even cost you, if you buy the bullion, it might cost you to store it and insure it. But when you have minus 40 basis point yield in Europe, you're looking at the 10-year German Bund at minus 30 basis points. Negative yielding bonds, and so much of them, makes the opportunity cost of gold cheaper. It makes it more gold more attractive. And in my work, I'm worried about the geopolitics, not just Iran. But I'm worried that we're on the verge of the second Cold War, that just like we have these forks in the Bitcoin, I think we get a fork in the internet, in globalization. And there's going to be a Chinese way. It'll be primarily for Chinese citizens, people who live in China, maybe some of the countries next to them. And then there'll be the U.S. way, which is still has a duopoly on, say, mobile operating systems, the OIS and the and Android. So I think that gold looks attractive. I'm not a gold bug. But for the second, third time in my career, I'm bullish on gold. I can see it going from this $1,400 they were sort of consolidating above this breakout to maybe $1,700. And that's a 20% move. And maybe it doesn't all come this year. But I think that when I look around the market, I think, where can I see 20% reasonable return? And right now, gold jumps out at me.
Okay. Hey, that means a lot to, I think, or it should mean a lot to the gold investors, that even someone like yourself is seeing that risk reward much in the favor of gold in the short term. I think it's also been encouraging for those gold investors to see some of the more volatility move in rather than just $1 or $2 moves a day. We started to see double digit dollar wise moves every day. Mark, what about next week, though? We always look ahead to some of the data or news that could drive markets. Yes, we're going to be getting some of the fallout from that G20 meeting. But what about next week? It is a shortened trading week across North America.
Yeah, so here's what I'm looking at. I think that the Canadian data, the GDP numbers we saw at the end of last week, I think that Canada is one of the few central banks that's legitimately not thinking about easing. I think most other central banks in the major countries thinking about easing, maybe the Bank of England an exception just because of Brexit. And Norway is a big exception as well. They are still in a hiking mode. But I think for the other countries, Canada stands out as being like solidly on neutral. I'm kind of thinking though the Canadian dollar might have been played out here. It rallied, I think, 130.50, 130.60, some important retracement areas there. But so I'll be looking at the economic data for next week. The most important probably will be the U.S. jobs data, partly because we had that soft report previously. But Canada also reports the trade numbers as well as the jobs data at the end of next week. And barring a big surprise, I mean, Canada's been having these really record job growth. And I think that it would have to take a big negative to really, like, break people of that view. And I think that the early call looks for another modest gain in the employment. In the U.S., we should get something back closer to trend. And that's going to be important because, just again, taking off that risk of a 50 basis point move. So what are we looking at? We had that May number, 75,000 increase. And I think people are looking for something closer to trend. Trend is around 170,000, 180,000. And so I'd look for something just below there. The reason I say just below there is we've been seeing a little bit of softness in some of the weekly jobless claim numbers. These are weekly numbers. They don't always dovetail nicely, but just tell us there might be a little bit of downside there.
All right, Mark, it's great having you on the show. I think we might actually explore that concept that you just shared too about the fork in the internet and how we could be seeing different avenues and different countries controlling different areas of that internet. That's a whole other conversation, but again, some good comments dealing with Fed easing, central bank easing, and where some of the last recessions and true financial excesses have come from. Mark, great chatting with you. Have a great rest of your weekend, my friend.
Thanks. Good luck, everybody.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.